Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One day, the coach for the boys' team asked me, do you want to play a real game with real referees, with real goals? Yes! Then he said, well, because we didn't have, you know, girls or women's soccer back then. So he said, well, we need to cheat a little bit. And I knew that you shouldn't do that, but I listened to him and he said, we just change your first name. Okay? So instead of Pia, we call you Pelle, and that's a boy's name.
Welcome to Coffee and Football. I'm Sebastian Alvarado, and I'm the host of this show where I sit down for a coffee with some of the most influential profiles in the game to learn about their life and career journeys. We're now back after a little break with an amazing lineup of new guests. First out is Pia Sundhage, a former professional and Swedish national team player, one of the pioneers of the women's game, who then became one of the most renowned coaches in world soccer. She just completed her latest task as the coach of the Swedish national team at the European tournament in Holland, which became her last tournament as a national team coach. Prior to that, she was the coach of the US national team, winning 2 Olympic gold medals in a row and earning the Coach of the Year award at the 2013 FIFA Gala. Pia tells an amazingly inspiring story filled with anecdotes and leadership lessons. And although she's been at the very top of the game for over 40 years, she remains beyond humble. We ended up speaking for over 2 hours, and I really didn't want to leave anything out, so I decided to break it into 2 parts, with the second part being released next week. So without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this one, part 1 with Pia Sundhage. Pia Sundhage, welcome to Coffee and Football. It's a pleasure to meet you first and foremost, and obviously an honor to have this conversation with you. So, nice to meet you again. We've met before. I'm not sure if you remember it.
I'm not sure either. When was that?
I'm gonna forgive you for this one. I must have been 12 or 13, and I was playing a youth tournament. It might have been in Jönköping, which is going towards the mid part of the country. Might have been there or in Uppsala, one of those places. It was in Gothenburg and it was in Stockholm. That's all I remember. And in one of the games or the tournament, I got like some kind of an MVP award, and you gave me one of these little technique balls.
There you go. It was we met in soccer. At least.
Exactly. So it's been a few years. Anyways, I typically do these interviews in New York. Now we're on your home field, basically. But can you just give me a bit of the setting on where we are here today?
Well, this is convenient for me because after this interview, I'm going a little bit south. So we are in south of Stockholm, and this is a house. And my assistant coach, she lives here with her family. 2 kids. And, you know, when we discuss about the next game or analyze the last game, very often I come here and so I know where the key is. So that's why we're here.
We had to get in through via the garage, and there was a hidden key in there somewhere. Since the theme of this is coffee and football, and we have been drinking coffee, but how do you like your coffee?
Strong and with a little bit of milk.
Yeah, had a good taste and strong and well-made. And you've been home now, well, in Sweden and in Stockholm for a little while, coaching the Swedish national team. Does it feel like home for good? Because you've been on the road for several years before that,
mm-hmm.
which comes with a certain lifestyle and routines. And
yeah, you know, it's a little bit unusual fact that I actually leave my country. I love my home, so to speak. But this soccer ball opens up a lot of doors and makes me brave. The courage to leave my country, and I've done it a couple of times. So in the U.S., I've been there, you know, three times, different times. And when I left, you know, when I got the job to be the coach for the U.S. team, that was a dream. And could imagine to coach the best team in the world. And after 5 years, I got an opportunity to coach a Swedish team. And we hosted the European Championship. So that was my first thought was great to come back home and coach my own country. And I've been here for, this is my fifth year. I'm ready to open up another door because this is the last thing I'll do with the national team. So after the European Championship, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do.
How does that feel?
Exciting. Honestly, I thought going back to Sweden 2013, I thought I would stay here. Now, enough of this traveling. But, you know, if you ask me today, you never know, because again, the soccer ball opens doors and, you know, I love to be on the field. Two goals, green grass, great players who wants to improve the game. That's all I need.
And that's something obviously we have in any place in the world. So on
Correct.
That note, if you just could pick any place and go and coach, are there any thoughts like that?
I could go anywhere. That's a nice part of it because I've been in different cultures. I've been in Norway, I've been in China. But the fact that even though I don't speak Chinese, there is a soccer language and I just love that. I breathe soccer and the reason why I dared to be in an interview with you is because of that soccer ball. I've been around people who wants to improve and it's all about the environment and performance. And we have in common the soccer ball. So if it's outside Stockholm, outside Sweden or anywhere would do.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing what that brings
yeah, let's
you.
Let's see.
Maybe you'll just stay home and lay back and read a book.
You never know.
And play your guitar.
Yeah.
So yeah, as you mentioned, obviously we're here in the lead up before your final tournament, the European Championship that's coming up in the Netherlands. We all remember last year's fantastic Olympics final.
Hmm.
But what are the feelings going into this, you know, last tournament?
You know, I get used to the feeling, first of all, the last couple of months. And what we do right now is to make sure that we do whatever it takes, try to find certain things we could do better, improve or do in a different way.
In what sense?
Well, everything pretty much. We talk about the way we play, the way we behave outside the field. We want to be generous, you know, to create that environment. You know, we want to bring out the best performance in each other. And that's almost a mantra. You say it over and over again, and then keep on reminding them, this is the last thing we're going to do. So make sure you enjoy. Enjoy the moment. And remember, I said that very often with the U.S. team because we were winning and winning. You know, yeah, check. Another game, check, another game. But please stop and enjoy the moment. So for me, soccer is so much more than a gold medal or a silver medal. It's my way to live, and I really want to enjoy life.
Yeah, I hear you on that, even though it's sometimes easier said than done, and it's a perspective that we tend to forget a bit. And I want to get back to this, but I'd like to ask you a little bit. I'm just interested in knowing what's a typical day for you, and do you have set routines and a set time that you get up? And
wow, I don't have a typical day. I think that's a great this part of this work actually. So if I have time, I go up in the morning, 7 o'clock. If I don't have anything in front of me during the day, I go for a run, a walk or something like that, and then have breakfast. And then it's phone calls. It's watching a lot of video, a lot of games. So now I can actually, you know, when you have internet, you can watch any game if you want to. And all the games in Allsvenskan. And this week I will actually see three games sitting in the stands. So I'm traveling in Sweden, but it's funny. They think that I, you know, spend a lot of time in the car, but compared to when I lived in the US, it took a flight from the East Coast to the West Coast. So, I think it's easy trip. You know, I go down to Gothenburg, takes 5 hours, something like that. That's a piece of cake.
Do you typically drive then?
Very often I do that because that makes me freedom to, because if I will swing by Eskilstuna, for instance, I can do that. And sometimes I take the train. I like to take the train. For me, it's the best way to travel, actually.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have any workout routines?
No, but I promise myself I need to stay fit, sort of. So I make sure that I do something 4 times a week. But it doesn't have to be a lot. But as long as I feel like, well, this is some sort of workout. When we have camps, most of us, at least the coaching team, we get up early in the morning and run a little bit and play soccer tennis. My friend, Mark Krikorian, he is one of the reasons why I actually, you know, moved to the US. I was assistant coach for Philadelphia Charge. And he's a champ when it comes to soccer tennis. And I just love it. And I think about him, you know, every time we play and we have different teams and, you know, it's a great way to create a nice environment and an atmosphere.
Yeah. And I think just having some kinds of workout routines is not so much about only having to be super fit. Also, it's a mental disconnect. Is there anything that you do to keep evolving yourself and in your leadership? Like, or do you have typical readings or do you speak to somebody? Do you have mentors? Like, what do you do to constantly keep evolving?
I have two mentors and none of them understands anything about soccer, which I think is great. But they are old women and they know leadership. And once in a while, once a month or something like that, I talk to them. Sometimes we have a meeting and reflect on my coaching. I also read. It's funny, I could read one book 3 times, different pages. And now I read about feedback. I take some notes and I just stop and reflect. Because I think there are many coaches that they are saying very good things. You know, express themselves in a wonderful way. But what separates a good coach, I think, from a very good coach is you actually go from words to action. It's so easy. Like yesterday, I had a speech and I think, a couple of things that's clever and it's good. But after that, I sit down and think, do I actually go from words to action? And that's the hardest part because, sometimes you don't. Ah, shoot. Could have done better. But it's a reminder. I do believe it's important to reflect what you're actually doing. And then I have sisters. I have 2 brothers as well. But those 3 sisters, they have been leaders. And just have a chat with them. It's so refreshing because they don't know anything about soccer. And they look at the problems or the issue we're talking about in different ways. And it's eye-opener very often. And read books like John Whitmore. I think it's tough. It's difficult, but I try. And there are certain things I'm looking for in certain places. So,
what would an example be?
Well, he talks about coaching about awareness and to be accountable or responsible for certain things. And I could just read 3 sentences and then stop there and try to put action what I have done or what other people do. And, you know, interested in how I can improve my coaching. Because now we have some young people coming up. And I can't treat them or coach them the same way I coach Caroline Seger. She's been there forever. So, and that makes me young, always on my toes.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting also with the sort of younger generation coming up. We'll go get back to this a little bit, but you know, the way you grew up and the type of society that you grew up in, it was a lot about the team, solidarity and certain values, and you're not supposed to stand out. And now we see a younger generation coming up and it's much more about me and a lot about personal kind of instant gratification and via social media and so on, right? So how would you say that your approach is different towards kind of that younger generation that comes with a very, very different mentality and upbringing, obviously?
I have the same kind of view. And as you said, you know, when I was a player, they said, you have to stand out. And then, well, it was just teamwork. Back then, you didn't have to work on teamwork. That's the culture. Now it's a little bit of an opposite. Because we do have players, they know this. I like that. They know their strength. The young people, they know their strength. And very often they say, what's in it for me? Which I think is good. But I try to remind them of, this is a team game. You have to, you know, play with somebody. So I think sometimes they forget to turn around and ask your teammate, what could I do for you? Because for me, that is teamwork. You help each other out. Because I do have my strength, correct, but I also have some weaknesses. So, and you need to get some help, but also give some help to your teammate. So look to your left, what do you have? Look to your right, what do you have? And what's your part in, what's your role in this soccer game? And you can't do that just once. You have to do it over and over again. And I feel that the younger player today, they are very motivated. They know what they want, but I would like them to be more engaged in the team. Because if, you know, we are different strength, but if we win, everybody is winner. And that's the whole idea of, if you look at the word solidarity, I'm born with that word in my family. And it's easy for me to look back. I know that I, alone, I'm pretty much useless, but together with others, I could be the best. And that's a wonderful feeling, and that's the way I want to live and coach.
You mentioned just here earlier, and I think also going from words to action, which to your point, it's very easy to say things. And I think we've all been in different environments and also culturally very different. I live in the US and then have been there for a bit, where they're very good at speaking up, and both individually or coaches talking, and there's a lot of great big words, but I don't always see the action. So how do you look at that? And do you have any concrete tips? Because I want to learn this too. How do I go from saying some big words? Or if I'm a young player, if I don't go to action, it's not worth perhaps all that much.
Well, I would say, first of all, words are important. That's some sort of a direction. That's some sort of communication, which is important. But I would respect you if you actually go from words to action. And what I try to do is to remind them. And in order to do that, I ask questions. She has decided to work on her right foot. Okay? She wants to improve her crossings, for instance. And when she comes back, she hasn't done that as much as she was supposed to do. So my question will be, for instance, how many times you've done it? How many times do you think you need to do it in order to improve in a real game? What kind of, I would say, the obstacles? What makes it so hard? Could you go around that? So for me, it's all about questions, to ask a better question that her answer will make her take the next step. And I need to be very patient and persistent in order to, you know, find a change. And it's hard with change. It's over time. You need patience. And I usually bring up Bob Dylan. When I read his book, he was saying that I became what I was practicing. And I love that expression, because if you want to improve your crosses, you have to practice, train over and over again. And all of a sudden, somebody in the stands will say, she has a great right foot. If you translate that to the real life, I want to be kind, or I want to be a good listener. You have to do the same thing. You have actually to remind yourself, make yourself aware of, what kind of person do I want to be? And what do I need to do? And that is practice. So I think life is practicing. And in order to give yourself some cred, you need to sit down and reflect. And sometimes, I talk for myself, sometimes I do a pretty good job, sometimes I don't. And it goes ups and downs, like life itself.
Yeah, and it seems like by having that approach of asking questions, it also gets people thinking. And I think It's pretty far from this notion of management by fear, which is another thing that we might not see as much in Sweden, but in America, there's many more coaches who have that kind of a style, which is more about, you know, really yelling and being really tough and, you know.
I heard about that when my first year in the U.S. and coaching by fear. And I asked them, so what about me? Well, talked about inspiration and so on. And Kristen Lilly, she says something very nice. And I use that as often as I can. She said, when I was in Boston as a coach, she said, your passion for soccer is contagious. And just saying that made me aware of, okay, that's one of my strengths. You know, show with my body, with everything I do, this is the passion. This is important. I do believe that you can do it. And I try to avoid to say, this is not good enough. Sometimes I actually did. But before I did that, I have 7-8 times I was trying to be, encourage them to try a little bit different or a little bit more or whatever it is. But I try to avoid to say, this is not good enough.
Picking up a little bit on we mentioned solidarity briefly, and obviously that comes from your upbringing. You were born in Marbeck, which is a little town.
Yeah.
Outside of another fairly small town called Ulricehamn in 1960, February 13th.
Correct.
That is, yeah. Well done. I know it because it's my brother's birthday as well, and that's why I always remember it. So, how would you describe your upbringing? And what did Sweden and the society here look like back then? We're talking about sort of the 60s going into the 70s.
Well, I was lucky because I had grown-up people, smart, clever, and they paid attention to me. I'm 6 years old, and instead of just toss the ball, I want to kick the ball. And that was very unusual. I was the only girl that wanted to play soccer. And, I played every day with the boys, my neighbors. And one day, the coach for the boys team asked me, do you want to play a real game with real referees, with real goals? Yes. Then he said, well, because we didn't have, girls or women's soccer back then. So he said, well, we need to cheat a little bit. And okay, I knew that you shouldn't do that, but I listened to him and he said, we just change your first name. Okay. So instead of Pia, we call you Pelle, and that's a boy's name. And I thought, okay. And I think people in that Marbeck thought I was a little bit weird, unusual, strange, but that was okay because I was a happy child. And the same thing with my mom and dad. They had no clue about soccer, but they saw that I was happy. So I played for 2 years, and my name was Pelle. And that was fine. We're just playing. And then I moved to, to Ulricehamn. And the same thing. Back then, you have gymnastic girls. They were playing brännboll. I don't know what you call it in English.
It's like softball.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. And boys that were playing soccer at those hours. And then another, my teacher, she asked me, do you want to play with the boys? And just asked me that, says something about what she had seen and paid attention to me. So I have gymnastic with the boys and I was playing the school team and so on. And another teacher said, well, we do have a women's team. I was 11 at the time. And we do have a women's team. You will have a blue jersey and, IFK Ulricehamn. So I went over there and I played with old women. I thought that was 25, 26 or something like that. So that was my first game in a real match, so to speak. So I was unusual, but the love for the soccer ball, people asked me if I wanted to play, and I was allowed to play soccer.
And your parents were a big support in that.
Yeah, they said, well, as long as you have fun and as long as you're healthy and, you know, if you behave, that's fine. So I'm very grateful for the way I was treated as a child. I could tell that everything I wanted to do was play soccer. And, expectation of what a girl could do changed a little bit. And I was happy about that, of course.
What did your parents do for a living?
My mom, she waitress all her life, and my dad, he bus driver pretty much all his life as well.
What's interesting, you mentioned that they had, well, really no clue about soccer, but still providing that kind of support and making sure they had fun. What would you say was the most kind of important advice that they gave you that you carry with you today?
Enjoy. Enjoy the soccer ball. I think that is a... And it's just funny because my daddy said, both feet on the ground. Remember where we come from. It's good if you have a sense of humor as well. And my mom, she gave me wings. You can do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want. Just try. And that combination, I would like to think that it was good for me. And, sometimes it worked out well, sometimes it didn't. But I was always welcome to come back. And I was safe and secure back home in my family. But if you want to try, just do it. If it doesn't work, just come back.
And then you ended up moving because of soccer to one of the sort of bigger teams and better teams. Do you remember that moment?
I do. I remember I watched just a couple of seconds on TV when Sweden played against Finland. This is 73. And I was 13 years old at the time, and I thought, that seems to be cool. I could do that. Just that feeling, I can do that. And after that, I moved from Ulricehamn, and I played in Falköping. It's an hour's drive, but I didn't move because my dad said, I don't think she is ready to move from home. I was 15, 14. I couldn't even cook a meal. I was useless. And now it's better she stays home. And then I took the bus to Falköping, and coming back, it didn't go the whole way. So my dad has to pick me up halfway or something like that. And it was fun, fantastic, exciting to play with the best players. So we played in the highest division. And as soon as I graduated from school, I'm 18, I went to Gothenburg to the best team in Sweden. And that was my lucky day.
And the team was JTEX.
JTEX, BK. And that was very important because then I had a chance to play with the best players and encouraged me to do even, to improve my game and try to do different things on the field.
How did that move happen? Did they call you and try to recruit you, or?
No, we played in my first game in the national team. I was 15, and then I met these players in JTEX. So when I, finished school, we had, had some sort of relationship with the players. The coach were never involved because it was, I want to play with the best team. Is it JTEX or is it Öxabek? Or no, I don't dare to move to Stockholm because of the Hammarby. So, it ended up with going to Gothenburg.
What would a contract look like back then?
We didn't have a contract. We just played.
So I'm assuming you were working on the side then?
Yeah, I've done that all my life, actually, even though when I finished playing when I was 36. I last couple of years I played, well, I worked 75%, so it was a full-time job. But I only 1 year I went to Italy, to Lazio, and then I became a professional player. I didn't have to work, but I don't think it was professional because we didn't practice enough. I thought so I had to practice extra and so on. I was a little bit crazy, 24, 25 years old.
Describe that moment. So you moved to Rome.
Yeah, I lived in Rome for almost a year, and that was huge for me. I didn't know any Italian at all. So I went, I learned the language by going to the stadium when the men played. And I went there 4 hours before kickoff. And you found people around. And when they recognized I was not Italian, where do you come from? I come from Sweden. from Sweden, Sven-Göran Eriksson, Lidholm. So they come about talking about men soccer players. So then I start to talk to them, and that's how I learn Italian. And we didn't win the Scudetto. It was runners up, and I played with a player, Carolina Muraccia, who later became a coach for Italy. Smart player, smart person. But I just played for 1 year because the next year I was back to Sweden. I want to get my education. So that's why I have the highest education in soccer today. So I'm happy because it was hard to choose between being professional player, sort of, stay in Rome, fantastic city, or go back to Sweden and get your education. But I went back to Sweden. I'm very happy for that.
What would you say were some of the main differences and learnings in the way the game was played and how it was prepared and in the lead up to games?
Well, a couple of things. When it comes to soccer, the coaching style could be different. I was so sure this is how you should coach. Totally wrong. There's so many different ways to coach. And there are also different ways to practice. I was born with, every time we warm up, for instance, always with the ball. But here in Italy, you had one of the players taking us around the field over and over again. I thought it was boring, but I was professional. You just do what you've been told to do. Shooting exercise was interesting because we were standing in a line and we got so many instructions how you could actually take a shot from different angles. And I didn't do that in Sweden. It was more like different lines and in different ways. But they were so accurate with how you should take that shot when you're on the left side of a goal or if you take far post or whatever. And the games, it was very emotional. I could tell you that the coach was very emotional and he was talking in a different way compared to Swedish coaches. And technical, that's what something I really enjoyed. You didn't have to face, you could face your own goal and get the ball on your feet. And was it a left foot or right foot? And then again, they were proud of that they were technical. I thought, I was pretty technical when I come from Sweden, but compared to Italian players, I was okay.
Did you feel like you improved your game a lot?
Well, I wouldn't say that. A little bit. Because you change your style a little bit. But I think we didn't practice enough and a few games. But if I stayed there a couple of years, I think it would be differently.
But you made the decision that it was time to go back to Sweden and then you can combine that with your education.
Yeah.
What did you study?
Sports, specifically soccer. So we were 10 students, the only woman, of course, 9 men, and the former coach for Sweden, Erik Hamrén, my class, Håkan Eriksson, the U21, my class as well. So it's funny because we pretty much took the same kind of path to elite soccer and in the national team.
Do you still remain in touch?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Must have been a pretty good education then.
Yes, I would say so. Very good.
Did you know already then that or had set that goal that you wanted to become a coach?
I can't remember exactly when I want to be a coach, but I had a coach in Jitex, Kai Hansson, and I had so many questions, opinions about, you know, building up the game or warm up with the ball or how many players. And he said to me, well, you are a pain in the neck. He said, it's not that easy to be a coach. Isn't it? I said, yeah. So he took me to education, the first step. And then I'm very grateful for that because now I got a chance to know a little bit more about soccer. So I just, you know, step by step, I just became a coach.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you today describe your coaching style?
There are different kinds of coaching styles, but I would say, I would hope that the players say that I'm positive. I want to coach what is healthy instead of saying, well, you shouldn't do that. It's not good enough. I would rather say, well, this is how we should do it. Tell me what do you need and could you do it more often? So a positive style and choose between sometimes you need to put down your foot. Sometimes you need to have the discussion and sometimes you just delegate. And in order to do that, you need to know your players. So hopefully Kristin Lilly is right. My passion for soccer is contagious because they listen and they get the message come across the players.
It seems like you've maintained a pretty consistent line, so to speak, even though you've gone from all the extremes.
Yeah, and in China as well.
Exactly.
So, but I would say that there is, first of all, I need to know who I'm coaching. What's the kind of group? That's the first part of it. What do they expect? Because that's different from the US team, Chinese team, and Swedish team, of course. But at the same time, keep my values and keep my personality and put that together. And in order to be successful, I really do need a coaching team behind the team, so to speak. So because I know my weaknesses, I know my strength. And my weaknesses, I have to look around because I have people around me. And I got some help from people in the US to pick the right coaches and the medical staff and so on. And the same thing in Sweden. So I made sure that I have people I want to work with and they are not like me. They are different. And in total, you know, I try to keep my personality. And then again, like my mentor said, who are you? Well, I know who I am. Well, are you sure? Yeah. And then I had to reflect what kind of signs and how people, how they look at me. But then the next question was, who do I want to be? Because I want to improve my coaching. But overall, I feel my dad and my mom, you know, both feet on the ground. Don't take yourself too seriously. A little bit of humor would make some good. And you can do whatever you want if you really try.
Where does your confidence come from?
I would think it comes from both the soccer ball. I'm good at it. But also comes from to get distance from this performance. It comes from my family. You know, you're good. No matter if you kick the ball into the goal or not, you will do. That's fine. You hear you my sister. And I think that combination with environment that I'm okay, even though I'm not playing or coaching. And at the same time, the courage, I think that the soccer ball, again, opens up a lot of doors. And I remember clearly when I went to LA, this is 2007, December, my first camp in LA, sitting on the plane thinking, what am I doing? And I told myself, if I'm not successful, it doesn't work. Actually, I could take the same plane back because I do have my family back. And I think that kind of thoughts, you know, I'm relaxed and sometimes it goes very well, sometimes it doesn't.
So since you touched on it, your first time in coaching the U.S. national team, but just to rewind the tape a little bit, take me through that moment when you received that phone call and somebody asked you, are you interested in this job?
Yeah, he told me, I think it was Gulati. Yeah, he called me and he said, you got the job. This is what the second time, because I went to an interview 2 years earlier, I think. But I got the job.
So they had called you.
Yeah, he called me and I picked up the phone and I, we want you to be the coach for the US team. I was just shouting straight out. And my friend, she just looked at me and Gulati said, I take that for a yes, you want the job. Yes, yes. And I was thrilled. I can still remember that moment. I know
where were you?
I was in Örebro at the time, in a corner of a room. I know exactly where I was. And I put down the phone and said, shoot, I am the coach of the US team, best team in the world. And then we start have to plan when I'm moving and so on, and a lot of paperwork and, you know. But that was a fantastic moment in my soccer life.
And then what happened?
I got to LA and I remember we had lunch. That's the first. And I know many of the players. I know of them. Yeah, I've seen them play and I have opinions about how they should and shouldn't play. Anyway, so my first words, because I wanted to have a great kickoff, I wanted them to feel and know that this is something special. You got a Swedish coach. Watch out. And I didn't know exactly what to say. And I felt that this is fantastic. I didn't speak English that well either, I thought, because I wanted to be emotional. Fantastic. I thought about marvelous. Well, that's Oxford English, I believe. It's awesome. I can't even spell to that word. So what should I do? And I thought about change. So I was standing in front of all the players. And the first thing I said to the players was, come gather round, people, wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown. And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are changing. And then I got the word change, changing. And I just look around. I remember Abby, she was just looking around like this. What is this? But something really important happened, I felt. They were smiling and they were clapping. Here we go. So it was this good start. And I took the chance that moment saying, I'm just a coach. I need your help. I need your left foot. I need your presence in the air and so on. And then just... That was a start, a little bit of a surprise, and I felt, okay, here we go. And then it went on.
They bought into it.
And that was they could have reacted differently, and that would be hard. But, Americans, they are really good at times, just boosting you.
That was actually the first thing I thought of as well, because I'm assuming that reaction would have been quite different if that was in China or even in Sweden for that matter.
Yeah, I did differently in Sweden because I thought, I can't do the same thing. So the first thing I said to the Swedish players was showing them video. And it was actually Barcelona. And it's an attacker. He is in and out in the attacking style, movement off the ball. And I was thinking, what kind of music should we have? None. It was dead silence. And could you imagine in the room, dead silence, a videotape, showing soccer, attacking. Then I said, after 4 minutes, and I said, well, every single minute, second, you make a decision on the field. Regardless if you're 5 yards from the ball or 50 yards from the ball, you make decisions. And a good team player make good decisions together. And if you have the same thought together, and if you have a lot of fun, this will be a good team. And they just looked at me and said nothing. Are you ready? And they said, oh, yeah, a little bit like that. It wasn't American style, but I thought it was fairly effective because it was all about movement of the ball, work together, and attacking style.
Just going back to the U.S. national team for a little bit, you come in I believe you had about 9, maybe 10 months to prepare.
Eight months.
Thank God, yeah. For the Olympics in 2008. In stepping into that and start working with a team, what were some of the things that you identified that you really needed to work on?
Well, first of all, that change, because I'm a new coach, it can't be too big of a change because they will lose their confidence. They will be confused. But it also couldn't be too small because they wouldn't recognize it. So it has to be something in between to make the difference. And you have to keep in mind, this is a very good team. I think so many coaches could have won that Olympics with that team I had 2008. The thing for me was, I felt that they went on to the next game over and over again without, you know, well, reflect and analyze. So my biggest job I thought was keep possession a little bit longer in the attack, higher up in the field, and enjoy when you win the game. And analyze when you, what was good? We won the game 3-0. Great. 3 goals. That's good. But how did we come up with all those chances, or how could we defend in a good way? When it comes to defending, I come from what we would call zonal defending in Sweden. And I know that April Hendricks and the other coaches have done the same thing, but I wanted to try to improve that a little bit. And that took a while, not so much in the back four, but in the midfield. So it was some tactical stuff, but it just tweaked a little bit because I had a good team. It's fun because I usually say that they made me look good. It's a good team. So in 8 months, you can't do that much. But we did it together. And I remember the first game against Norway. We lost that game, our very first loss. But the way we regrouped and perfect for American team, you know, coming back and do better. The players helped us quite a bit by the way they reacted.
And you obviously had some very strong personalities on that team.
Oh, yeah.
And some pretty big star players. Oh, yeah. Were there any things that in your leadership you needed to change or approach differently in dealing with those types of personalities?
Nah, it was something happened. It was we played Brazil just before the send-off game. Abby Wambach, she broke a leg. So we lost the big star. And so many good things happened then. And by the way, my assistant coach, Jill Ellis, she was smart enough, instead of putting another attacker in her spot, Abby Wambach, she said, why don't we play Angela Euclides? And that was a winning move. And I was thinking, Angela Euclides, she's a midfielder. She's fairly good technique. She's calm, but she was the link between midfield and forward. And I would say, when I look back, the fact that I listened to Jill Ellis and her way to analyze this specific moment, and not, when Abby goes down, well, it is what it is. You have to move on. And we were not emotionally well carried away. We just start work on. And I think that's a winning moment. The fact that I listened to Jill Ellis, we had Angela Euclides in that position, and eventually won the Olympic gold medal.
Can you describe what the structure looks like in the U.S. with the national team and maybe compare it to, say, Sweden? Because that's not very common in many other parts.
Well, a couple of things. And remember, this is, I don't know exactly how it looks like today. But back then, 2008, we didn't have a league to begin with. And of course, if you had a contract with the U.S. team, and if you were cut, that's pretty tough. But that is my job. And there've been a couple of players. It's been tough. But as long as she wasn't surprised, I think I'd done a fairly good job at least. And because it's all about performance. 2011, they had a club team as well. So they were paid from two sides pretty much. I think the biggest difference between the U.S. and Swedish team, the fact that the Swedish team's player, she doesn't get paid from the federation in that way like a U.S. team. But I felt we had so many more days together with the U.S. team compared to the Swedish team. And I think I had more impact with my way of leadership, coaching, and looking at soccer with the U.S. team compared to the Swedish team. We have few days with the Swedish team. And I think that's the biggest difference. if you get cut here in Sweden, you still do have your salary and you play your soccer with your club team. So I would say that that's the biggest difference, which make it so hard for the Swedish team to win a medal in the World Cup or Olympics. The difference between Sweden and Germany, for instance, if you take this European Championship, the league in Sweden, that goes from April to late October with a short break during the European Championship. While Germany, they start in September and they end up in May. So the coach, Steffi Jones, she has them from late May and can prepare them for the European Championship, but we don't. So in that aspect, Norway and Sweden, I would say it's a little bit tougher to prepare the team for European Championship because of the league. But it is what it is, and you have to make the right priorities. And sometimes you have a good timing, you can do a fairly good job.
If you have to pick out one moment or the first thing that comes to mind of your best moments with the US team, which moment would that be?
2011, the quarterfinal against Brazil. We one lead up, and then something happened in the box. And I believe that I see both Bueller and Marta on the ground. I was absolutely sure that Marta would be sent off because she cheated. But Bueller, she was sent off because she took down Marta in the box. So from having this sense of we have one player up, right now we have one player down. And they got a PK and they scored 1-1. And then extra time, they scored 2-1. And Marta again, and she was phenomenal. However, we have some good plays in the US. So what's happening, it is extra time is 122nd minute, I think. Christiane, she has the ball on our right side. And Christy Rampone, she takes the ball. And Christiane falls, but they don't get a free kick. And Christy plays the ball into Carly Lloyd. She takes a couple of steps, heads up, played wide to Megan Rampino. And I'm thinking, Megan Rampino, we worked on crosses on the far post, on the far post. Could you please put it on the far post? And I was looking at, where's Abby? Where's Abby? It takes forever. I can see the ball flying. It takes ages. And when Abby, with her perfect style and presence in the air, when she heads the ball and score that 2-2 goal and then win on PKs, that is my moment in my soccer life as a coach.
It has been a huge, wholehearted effort from the States. Rapino, Wambach! 2-2! That's what you call USA razzle-dazzle!
It's almost like a movie. But if that had been an American movie, I'd say, oh, that's just typical, boring movie. But this has happened in the real life.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe on iTunes and write a review. I would really appreciate it as we grow this podcast one listener at a time. If you have any feedback or ideas, feel free to send me an email at sebastian@coffeeandfootball.com. You can also link up with me via Twitter. The handle is @coffeesfootball. Stay tuned for next episode, part 2 with Pia Sundhage. It will be another amazing one. Thanks again and have a great week.